Nothing on this podcast is intended as legal advice, nor does it create an attorney-client relationship. Please be advised that this podcast also contains spoilers and swears.
Hello, and welcome to Murder, She Woke, a podcast about how your wife is really not cool with having your ex over, bro. I'm one of your hosts, Elizabeth.
And I'm your other host, Laura.
Laura, we have a big announcement to make this week.
We sure do.
Would you like to make it?
You've put a lot more effort into this, so I think you should be the one to make the announcement.
So guys, we have a real live website where you can go and look at not much right now, but enough to know that we put enough effort into this to prove that we're serious-ish. It was done by the wonderful Maddie, who is a Baltimorean like myself. So thank you, Maddie.
Is that what you call yourselves? Baltimorean?
Ironically, yes.
I like it.
Yeah, we're going to be putting up stuff on it.
I mean, we have lots of great ideas of things to put on the website, but it's just an issue of whether those actually make it to the web.
And it's not because we don't care. It's because we both really like to nap and because we're both busy-ish. Since we both ended up here at the same time, do you want to talk about Murder, She Wrote?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we have to get through this one.
Well, let's talk about season one, episode 16, Paint Me a Murder.
The first few scenes, it was probably like the first 10 minutes or so, is really just setting a scene and introducing you to a bunch of characters that are very forgettable. It opens and we see like an ocean splashing on rocks, kind of could pass for Cabot Cove, but then we see a big stucco mansion. And then there is an unknown shadowy figure in the dark that is loosening a large, heavy cement planter on this terrace. And he or she is loosening this planter with a chisel. And then it's like the next day. And the focus now is on this character named Diego, who was the Joker in the Batman television series.
I was going to say, he's played by the great Cesar Romero, and I was going to tell you, Laura, I actually watched the Batman movie over the weekend to mentally prepare for this.
Oh, nice.
The one from 1966, the one where he joins forces with Catwoman and Penguin and the Riddler, and then they kidnap the United Nations guys.
Oh, well, so there's going to be pretty much a replication, I think, of that
Are
movie.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Next year? I think. Yeah,
who's
no.
Is it Ben Affleck Batman?
No. Who? Oh, okay. It's you're going to think it's terrible, and I think it's terrible too, but I'm going to give him a chance. It's the fucking Twilight guy.
Oh, Robert Pattinson. Yeah, honestly, I could see him doing a good Bruce Wayne, cuz I feel like Robert Pattinson was limited by his material in Twilight, and then he just kind of like
okay.
Stop showering to protest. I don't know. But, oh, that's cool.
It's crazy. So it's got the Penguin. It's got Catwoman played by, Catwoman is played by Kravitz. Zoe Kravitz.
Oh, Zoe Kravitz. Ooh, that's a good
yes.
choice.
And it's got the Riddler. It's going to be really good.
It's not Jim Carrey again, is it?
No.
Wouldn't it be funny if they just brought back all the original ones, like Danny DeVito and Jim Carrey? I would laugh.
That was a...
What a time to be alive. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
I interrupt. Well, this has been Batman Corner. Back to Diego. So Diego is this famous artist. He owns this mansion. He actually owns this private island that this mansion is on. It's his 60th birthday coming up, and he's invited a bunch of his friends over to celebrate with him. Before they get to the celebration, Diego is giving, I guess, painting lessons to, is children on the island, or do the children come by, but we'll have to talk about that.
I think the children are on the island because they're in his backyard.
Right, but do they live on the island? Because doesn't he own the island?
Maybe they go by helicopter. I don't know.
Okay.
You're asking too many questions.
So while Diego is giving these art lessons, we are introduced to his group of friends. We have Elaine, who is a philanthropist for African children. We have Inspector Henry Kyle. I just call him Inspector the whole time. I really like him.
Mr. Willard is a washed up playwright, and he hasn't made any money in years. So that's a fun little
fact. That's true. And then we have Belle, who is Diego's ex-wife, and Margot, who is Diego's new wife, who is much younger than Diego. And then a little bit later, we'll meet Miguel, who is Diego's son and who's also a former drug addict. And then Stefan, who I think is supposed to be like the groundskeeper. He's also an artist, I think.
Yeah, I thought he was like some kind of like artist residence, some kind of protege that Diego collected to keep around. I don't know. I was very confused about his role, too.
Yeah, I got that impression because Stefan calls him maestro. And I mean, you kind of use that as a term for, yeah, your mentor.
Yeah, it's like your patron whenever you're an artist. Like, that's an artisty word. But he apparently is a sculptor, but he's also a groundskeeper, but he's also something else. So stay tuned.
So the friends are kind of on this terrace talking and drinking and smoking. And we learn that Willard just bought one of Diego's paintings called the Gold Madonna, and it was very expensive. And so now three friends have Diego originals. That's Belle, Inspector Henry, and Willard. They all have original. We also learn kind of through cryptic conversation that Miguel is kind of useless. And it pans over to a conversation that Miguel is having with someone named Maria over this really weird, old-looking, big radio. And it sounds like Maria's in trouble during this conversation. So now Stefan has sculpted this bust of Diego, and he's showing this bust of Diego to Margot, which again is Diego's new wife. And Margot loves it. And Stefan is in love with Margot, and he kisses her, and she allows the kiss for a little bit, but then pushes him off and says that she loves her husband. Or I don't even think she says she loves her husband. She says her husband loves her, and that's enough for her. So later that night, they're at a dinner party, and Diego gifts Elaine with a new painting. And then also at the dinner party, we learn that two more guests will be arriving in the morning. Those guests are Jessica and a guy named Sir John.
After dinner, it appears that Diego does what most normal people do, which is walk around outside playing guitar while wearing a brocaded smoking jacket. Funnily enough, I think he might have been the only person who didn't smoke, but he's the one with the smoking jacket, so good for him. While he's walking around, I guess serenading himself, we keep cutting to the mysterious pair of leather gloves up on the terrace or the patio or whatever. It's something above him. And this person is rattling the planner back and forth and pushes it off the edge. And I guess Diego catches himself just in time. He sees it falling and he darts out of the way because his attention had been distracted by Margot holding out booze for him. So he was able to see and save himself.
The next morning, everyone is gathered at the beach to greet the guests that are arriving. Elena and Willard are fishing on the shore when the helicopter comes in. And Sir John and Jessica get out of the helicopter and everyone is exchanging pleasantries. And then you see Willard just stumbling into the ocean and he collapses into the water. And then Elaine she starts screaming, help, help. He's going to drown.
I also thought it was a little weird because I think the way it was shot, it actually looks like Elaine pushed him. But I feel like that might have just been my eyes playing tricks on me because I just thought it was really funny.
I thought that he was running into the water. It looked not like he was stumbling and that was just the way that he stumbled. It looked like he was running, not full speed, but deliberately into the water.
It was really weird. I mean, we learn a little bit later that it's not quite what it is. It's not quite what meets the eye, but still, I think the scene wasn't very well acted, and I'm not sure that the actors quite knew what they were doing when they shot this, because, yeah, it's not very apparent what is going on, but it seems that everybody who's there seems to know immediately, because Inspector tells him, he says, I'm no doctor, but I think it's a coronary, and they're going to send him to the mainland in the helicopter. And Miguel is like, oh, I'll go with him. Not a big deal. And they all get in the helicopter and they fly away. Cesar Romero, Diego, pulls Jess aside and he says that he has to talk to her about something important. So they go on a beach walk. He flexes a little bit about his island and Margot and about how great his life is, because I guess if you've got a private island and a spouse like half your age, life is pretty good. His life is not perfect because someone is trying to kill him, and he needs her help to find out who. He says whoever is trying to kill him is inside the house. So it's one of these people. So the ones we met earlier, because there's like 8 of them on the island together. And somebody is up to no. We go back inside and we learn some things about our characters. First, we learn that Belle, the ex-wife, used to be a concert pianist or some pianist of note, but she hasn't been playing lately for whatever reason. Brown Scarf Lady Elaine is hanging out and talking to Sir John about the paintings and the orphans, and she's very vague about it, but she says, like, over and over, I've spent my entire adult life working for these disadvantaged children or whatever. We're like, okay, cool. Sir John offers to auction off the painting for her so that she can give the money to her foundation, and it turns out he has a gallery in London. Meanwhile, Jess is back up on the patio, and she's looking around. She finds a matchbook. I'm not sure if she found a cigarette butt at this point or if it was just the matchbook. I can't really remember. Do you know?
Yeah, I think she finds 2 cigarette butts.
So she finds the cigarette butts and the matchbooks, and she's kind of looking around, and she turns around and Inspector is there, and he's kind of nosing in, and he starts kind of pressing her for information, and at first she kind of insists, hey, you're a suspect. Well, she doesn't say it explicitly, but basically tries to shove him off, being like, none of your beeswax, I'm on a mission, fuck off, right? But they end up talking about the clues that they find and who in the house is a smoker, and then it didn't turn out, but they speculate that whoever was smoking is left-handed because the matches were torn from the matchbook from the left. And then they see a shoving match between Diego and Stefan about Margot, and notice that Stefan is favoring his right hand while he's pushing Diego. So they say, oh, well, it definitely can't be him because he's right-handed. And then Elaine is lurking in the bushes doing a spy. But Miguel has disappeared. Jessica kind of broaches the topic to Diego, saying, hey, we think it might be Willard, and he won't believe it. He absolutely refuses to believe it. And she wants to call the police, but he doesn't want to ruin his birthday party.
This part really bothered me, because Diego approaches Jessica and says, Jessica, I need your help. One of my guests is trying to kill me. I need you to look into it for me. And then when Jessica comes to Diego with her theory, he kind of gets a little irate and says something to the effect of he refuses to believe the darker side of man, especially one that is so close to him. So I'm just a little, he's giving mixed signals here, because he's already said that he knows one of his guests is trying to kill him, but now he is in disbelief that one of his guests is trying to kill him. So I'm going to need you to pick a lane, Diego.
The only credit I can give him is maybe he was being cagey about it and he thought it was somebody in particular. and he was just kind of trying to get Jessica to reach the same conclusion that he did. But he seems like kind of a, I don't want to say wildly inconsistent, but he seems like a man who doesn't like think too much before he does something.
He also seems like the kind of guy that his behavior is predicated on his emotions of the moment.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I can see that from like a mile away. And I don't know if it's they're trying to make it the artist thing or the European thing.
I was not going to say that because I didn't want to offend any of our artist listeners out there. Elizabeth said that, not me.
Thanks. Thanks for throwing me under the bus. Remind me never to use you as an attorney. So in after this exchange, we go again back to the house where we not only play with crossbows and learn that Miguel is an expert crossbow shooter, but then it turns out, supposedly, that Diego, Margot, and Belle are all BFFs, which I'm sure is news to Margot and Belle, because let's just face it, you're never okay with the ex. Even if you're nice, there are not very many cases where that's okay, especially since I think it comes out later that Diego actually left Belle for Margot. So that's got to be an extra finger in their eye.
So did you notice Belle's dentures almost flying out of her mouth in that scene?
No, I did not. Oh, man. I need to go back and watch that.
She's Diego, you're so good at your crossbows.
But they're all kind of drinking, standing around drinking, not really enjoying each other's company, and kind of making passive-aggressive barbs at one another. And Inspector has been snooping around. He tells Jessica that he finds out that Willard has been stocking up on Diego paintings in bulk. But how could he? Because he's broke AF. And then Jess tells him something that this really bothers me, because this is the same kind of annoying trope that it's a lazy trope. It's the idea that an artist's work increases in value as soon as he's dead. Which, I understand the premise behind it. They're not making any more paintings, so there's a finite amount to collect or whatever. But I don't know if that's actually based in reality or not. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know. I mean, I know the economics of money. I don't know the economics of the art world. Just from a supply, yeah, like you said, a supply and demand. The supply has now become very limited, but the supply was the same number it was before he died.
Yes, but there was always the potential for more. Is that an economics thing? Does it have a name? Futures? Like painting futures?
I don't know about painting futures.
I just read words and repeat them. I don't actually know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I don't know much about painting futures, but I will have to look into that.
You know, it's driven home that both Willard and Belle are kind of burnouts, and Jessica confronts Sir John, saying, why is this broke motherfucker buying all these paintings from your gallery? And Sir John is like, oh, I haven't seen him since that fancy horse race like 2 years ago. I have no idea what you're talking about, lady. And then we go to Belle, who's very sad about being left for a younger woman. And she's kind of rubbing her hands. It's kind of implied that she has arthritis or some kind of ailment that prevents her from fully exercising her talent. So that is where we leave that until a dark skulking through the whatever room has the crossbow in it. We see kind of a first person point of view from the point of view of the killer, supposedly. And then the person wearing the leather gloves grabs a crossbow in the arrows and then just biffs off. So that's the end of that scene.
And so then it picks up with the next morning. Diego is on his morning walk with his dog. And we see the person that has stolen the crossbow kind of take aim at Diego. So Diego is on the beach with his dog, and this person is a little bit higher, like on a cliff, in like a wooded cliff area. And this person shoots Diego. So then it cuts to Jessica having a conversation with the inspector when they hear a scream. And then I guess they just follow the sound to the scream, and they discover Elaine standing over Diego's dead body. Diego has been shot in the back, and there's an arrow sticking out of his back. And the next part I thought was kind of funny, because the butler and the inspector carry Diego into the house, into his bedroom, with a piece of broken fence. I don't know why I found that funny, but I just found it funny.
They were improvising. It was a splint, probably.
Well,
have you ever heard of field medicine?
It was just a piece of fence. Where did they even get the fence? I don't know.
I don't know where the rest of the fence was. Jeez.
They tell Margot. She seems really surprised and upset. Then Jessica goes to the room where the crossbow is and points out that the crossbow is missing. And then the inspector, well, there goes our Willard theory, because Willard's no longer on the island and now Diego's dead. So it couldn't have been Willard.
Whenever Jessica and Diego were talking earlier, he had basically said through exposition that there's no way on or off this island except for helicopter, except for this really weird stretch of beach that's really treacherous, and maybe somebody came over that way.
It was mentioned that someone could maybe come by boat onto this really narrow, small part of the island, but only a few people know about it. So Sir John comes into the room and announces that the huge, old, big radio phone has been smashed. So they're all stranded. And then the inspector says, okay, well, let's just chill for a minute, because Miguel may come back today. But if not, the helicopter is going to be here in the morning to take us back to the mainland. So let's not freak out. Except everyone is freaking out, because, of course, they are stranded on an island with a... So Sir John and Stefan go out to look for the crossbow. And then Jess takes the inspector to a part of the beach that she saw earlier in the morning. What she saw earlier was a boat that had come across the beach. So Jessica takes the inspector there to show him, and then they see someone trying to escape the island on the boat. So they go out charging this guy trying to escape the island. Turns out it's Miguel, and he has a bunch of his dad's paintings. So they bring Miguel back to the house, and for some unknown reason, he's got a gash in his head and his head is bleeding. And then he tells us about Maria. So Maria's, I guess, his girlfriend that he's not supposed to see, because his daddy told him he can't see Maria anymore. And Maria is in trouble. There's a warrant out for her arrest. So Miguel was stealing Diego's paintings so he could sell them and then give the money to Maria's lawyers to pay off the government officials. I don't know, maybe daddy had a reason to say don't see Maria anymore. Sir John comes in with a crossbow and he accuses Miguel of killing Diego. But Jessica was like, hold up, if he killed Diego with a crossbow, why wouldn't he have tried taking the crossbow with him when he was trying to leave the island? Which I don't really understand, because he was trying to leave the island on a very small boat. And it was very obvious what killed Diego, because there was a large fucking arrow sticking out of his back. So I don't really understand Jessica's point of the killer should have taken the crossbow with him.
I guess maybe fingerprints, but he was wearing gloves, as we saw. And I don't know. That is kind of weird. Yeah, because why would you take a crossbow with you? You could shoot yourself with that by accident.
Back to the accusing parlor. Miguel is saying he didn't kill his father. He didn't even know his father was dead. He also has no motive to kill his father, because everything goes to Margot. He doesn't get any. And then this kind of non sequitur, it doesn't even really belong in the scene, but we learn that Diego had created several more paintings over the last year, and those paintings are stored in the workshop out back. Then Miguel flips the script and accuses Sir John of murdering Diego, because Sir John owns several paintings, and now they have suddenly tripled in value now that Diego is dead. And then Sir John punches Miguel. And then the next scene, Jess is at the beach raking the sand. The inspector asks what in the bloody hell she's doing. And Jessica theorizes that Willard's heart attack was drug-induced, probably by amyl nitrate, which simulated a heart seizure. So she goes on to further theorize that Willard panicked after his failed assassination attempt on Diego and then wanted to get off the island. But then the inspector points out that Diego died after Willard left the island. So really, in order for Willard to be the killer, he would have had to sneak back on the island. And then Jess finds a capsule of what she believes once contained Amyl Nitrate. Then Sir John walks up on the beach and says that Stefan still hasn't returned from looking for the crossbow, and apparently he has a raft stored away somewhere. So then everybody goes to look for Stefan, and the inspector is looking at his place and says it's pretty much cleaned out. And then Miguel comes around the building and said the raft is gone. So now everyone believes that Stefan has skipped town. And then later that night, everyone's asleep, and Jessica wakes up because the dogs are barking, and then she looks out the window and there's a big fire. The workshop out back is in flames.
A couple interesting things happen. Is first, she starts yelling about fire, which is obviously something that you would probably do. And Inspector who kind of goes nosing in? They try to go into the workshop and they notice that somebody's lying on the ground in there. Turns out it's Margot, and they kind of firemen carry her out of the burning workshop, and she apparently is still alive, but it seems like she has some problems with breathing, as you would if you were stuck in a burning building. And then they talk about getting the hose to put out this fire, but what they come up with is basically something like a garden hose.
Yeah.
Which, that entire building is up in flames, and I am not a fire expert, but I feel like that wouldn't help very much. I hear that you have some special fire knowledge by reason of adjacency. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so my wife was a firefighter, so she knows all about fire safety, structure fires, car fires, all the fire.
By the time, and I could be wrong, but the fire seemed to be very far along before anybody noticed. And I'm not sure that that's typical, but if you want to make your poor wife watch part of this episode and tell us about it, that would be super helpful. They're in the parlor or wherever again, and Jessica's asking Margot questions. Margot seems to have recovered immediately. And they do like kind of a murder demonstration where it comes to light that based on the way that Margot was grabbed by the killer, that the killer was right-handed. And obviously that creates a problem because our planter person was left-handed, to which I say people can be ambidextrous, or this isn't completely dispositive, right? These are just kind of inferences that you're making, and then you're making inferences on top of those. Everyone's scapegoating Stefan. I guess it's easy to blame someone who's not in the room because he's not there to defend himself. But Margot kind of spills the beans, and she says that he is a secret Bulgarian scientist refugee who is hiding on this island because if anybody finds out he's there, Bulgaria is going to execute him. And I think we had talked about this in an earlier episode. I think it's the one with the Russian ballerinas. There are ways to safely defect to a place where you can't get murdered by the government. It seems like a really weird MacGuffin in here to kind of throw that in, to just say, oh, he's scared of the police because of the Bulgarian, which, first of all, that's a real fuck you to Bulgaria. I don't know much about them, but I imagine they don't want their names associated with murdering political dissidents.
Yeah, no, this was just so weird and random and out of the blue. And I don't know if eccentric is the right word, but it was extra. The writers had to make a reason for why he doesn't want to be discovered. I feel like they were just throwing darts at a map and then throwing darts at a list of reasons. And this is just what they landed on.
He's gone. And then Sir John is talking about how Miguel is a piece of shit and it was probably him. And fuck Miguel, he sucks. And so Inspector is kind of skulking around and he talks to Jessica and he does something really interesting, which I caught and which I thought was significant, where he yawns and then he covers his yawn with his left hand. So as soon as I see that, I'm like, what the fuck? Also, if you'll notice, when he was on the beach with Jess and gardening, he was wearing leather gloves.
I did not catch that.
And I was like, oh man, subtle clues. And I was so proud of myself. You know who did it? Because of subtle clues. I'm getting so good at this game.
Did not catch that either.
And Jessica doesn't think that it is Willard or Stefan. And she kind of lays a trap for the killer. And another thing that comes up again in passing is Sir John makes a comment about Diego's gold Madonna, which, as you'll remember from earlier, Willard had said that he had just purchased and that he was super glad because it was really expensive and cool. But it turns out the Sir John has it hanging in his gallery. So that is another thing to kind of give a question mark about. So to the accusing parlor. Sir John is trying to sneak down the stairs. It's the next morning. We see there's a helicopter on the beach, and we see that I believe it's Inspector had gone out to greet the pilot. And they're in the parlor, and she starts accusing Sir John, saying that he and Willard were working together because they wanted to kill Diego to make his work more valuable. Between the two of them, they had been buying up artwork of Diego's and I guess cornering the market. And so apparently whenever Willard tried to kill him and then failed, he tried to get off the island because he was afraid of Sir John, which is why he faked his heart attack. And it kind of gets a little convoluted. Then Belle comes in and Sir John gets his panties in a bunch because there's ladies, and he makes some stupid comment about it being sexist. Turns out Willard is going to snitch, and then Sir John confesses, of course. It's time to go. Inspector lays it on thick with Jess, and she seems to be at least receptive towards it. So he kisses her hand and they talk about hanging out in London, and that's the end of the episode. Oh, hey, Laura. I heard that we have a super special guest today.
Yes. So I was able to wrangle up super special guest, spouse of the pod, Michelle, who is my wife.
Hello, Michelle. It's nice to finally meet you. I've heard lots about you. All cool and awesome.
Likewise. I feel so honored to be on the pod.
Doesn't she have a podcasting
voice? She does. I think it's better than my podcasting voice, to which I say I'm totally not mad.
Elizabeth, you have a great podcasting voice, but Michelle's voice is very sexy.
There. Okay. So what I'm hearing is that Michelle wants to host the pod going forward. Okay, cool.
All right. Yes.
Hey, you are welcome to be on the pod anytime you want, like for serious.
Well, today she's bringing us her expert witness testimony as a former firefighter.
Indeed. Yeah, I was a firefighter for about 5 years, and I worked in a station where we actually did fight fire instead of just run EMS calls. And so I've seen quite a bit, and this episode's fire was kind of laughable. So I don't know how deep you guys want to dive into it.
No, I think normally, like in this case, I feel like I don't even know like what I'm looking at. So I'd just be curious, as somebody with your experience, kind of what were your thoughts about this? And I guess, like, what would you do in a situation like that, where like a small outbuilding is on fire and there's no fire department? And I don't even know. I don't know what to ask because none of it makes sense to me.
Okay. Well, I'll just dive in and say, like, right off the bat, the fire was, I mean, hilarious for me to see because it was obvious that they had like strung some sort of pipe around the windows and the doors to just pipe in, like, say, some sort of gas and just light that on fire, because there was no smoke. There was nothing, no like soot on around the doors or windows or anything. And it was just conveniently through the cracks of the doors and the windows. And then once you finally get a glimpse inside, it's what we would call a room and contents fire, where things in the room are burning. It's not actually the structure. And so in this case, you can see where very few things are on fire in the room. I mean, like they started, one painting had the corner on fire. There was a couple other items on the floor that had a small fire. And so there was really nothing burning in the room itself. I mean, they were all very small fires, but it looked like it was a rip-roaring fire, as we would call it, just from the outside. But like Backdraft and movies that have firefighting and scenes where somebody's entering a structure that's on fire, there's no smoke ever on any of these things because obviously you couldn't see in, so they're not going to put it, you know, smoke in it. But in the real world, I would have approached that up the stairs. I would have had a 3-inch line, which has like 150 pounds of pressure. So it's like wrestling a bear to try to get the water to the actual fire scene.
And when you say line, you mean like a hose, right?
A hose, yeah. And in this case, they, you know, reeled out a garden hose. And I guess that's really the best that they had to try to salvage whatever was burning. But
yeah, I was going to ask about that later. So I'm glad that you noticed it and that it wasn't just something I was kind of obsessed with.
Yeah, and it's funny, like they didn't start to apply any water until like everyone had kind of left the scene. So it's, I don't think that they were too urgently concerned about the fire spreading. But the one thing, there was so many things in this, you know, frame, so to speak, that was funny in my mind. And the first thing was, as soon as Jessica runs up and, you know, she's running up the front stairs, she sees Margot laying on the floor, but she screams, "Oh my God, the paintings!" Like she doesn't give a damn about Margot.
Well, Margot's value doesn't increase after she's dead, so.
No, apparently not. Apparently not. So the other things that I would just say, just to reiterate, like there would be way more smoke. In fact, we would probably have entered the room on our knees if more things were on fire because you can't see. Smoke rises just like heat rises. So you probably wouldn't have seen Margot if it was an actual room and contents fire. So a lot was made for TV.
Did you handle any of, I mean, I'm sure as a firefighter, you were trained in first aid and stuff, but how long could a person theoretically survive? Because I know there's all these issues if she just get burned up, like smoke inhalation. Like how long, if Jessica hadn't found Margot, how long could she have been there before she just died?
Well, really, I think people think that most folks are, you know, their cause of death in a fire is because they were burned. But actually, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be smoke inhalation. But given that she was on a lower level, I mean, as I said, smoke rises. She was laying on the floor. And there was very, if it was, you know, real world type of scenario where it was a room and contents fire, if she was on the floor, she would have a pretty good chance to make it out alive and have quite a length of time to until she was rescued. But I've seen a lot of folks who, you know, didn't make it. But, you know, there's a number of scenarios that played out where, like in this case, that they actually do make it out when they're unfortunately caught in a fire.
So then it sounds like in this case, she probably did have a decent amount of time to survive. Because A, there was no smoke,
right?
Really. And yeah. B, they got there pretty quickly.
They did. They did. And they were all, you know, Johnny on the spot. And in fact, the thing that I literally lost my shit when I saw this was when, what's the guy's name, the detective?
Inspector.
What's his name? His name is Inspector.
Okay. Inspector. So Inspector goes running in to swoop Margot up. And once he starts to pick her up, she's got on like mule kind of house slipper things. And so one starts to fall off and then she kicks out her leg to keep the shoe on and is desperately trying to hang onto the shoe so she it doesn't fall off. And it looks ridiculous.
Yeah, it's really funny.
I need to go back and watch that. I did not notice that. Oh my God. You can't.
Yeah, no, it's hysterical.
It's so funny because she is supposed to be passed out. But she has her leg kicked high up in the air so she can keep this shoe on.
I mean,
I don't know why it was so important to her to keep the shoe on.
I guess she didn't want it to burn down.
Assuming that I ever get to the point where I have a private island and I become some kind of recluse painter with a workshop and somebody decides to set it on fire, what can I do to kind of mitigate the damage with what I have in terms of, like, just the garden hose? Like, how do I keep it from spreading? What do I do?
So, I don't know if you have the misfortune of working in an office where there's, you know, it's highly populated. There are sprinkler systems and things like that that I've seen, you know, obviously they're in commercial buildings, but in fact, some residential structures have it. In fact, here where we live, there's four-story townhomes in addition to the single-family homes, and the four stories requires that they have, that they're sprinklered. So that doesn't bode well. Like if you have a cooking mishap, you have to be very careful about actually setting the fire, you know, setting the sprinklers off. So that's one way to do it.
So don't cook where you paint.
Yeah, no. Good point. That's a good point. And also, like, for instance, my mom lived on a small island. And granted, I mean, in this case, in the episode, it was just Diego's house that was there. But on the small island, they had recruited certain folks to serve as volunteer firefighters and EMS. So you may just have to bring on your own, you know, workforce to help out in cases.
We have to wait to get them from the helicopter or the kids that were drawing the donkeys. Just get them to be firefighters.
Right.
Like, right.
Still never explained how the kids got to the island.
Maybe they like live in a cave on the island or something. That would be funny. That looks like a pretty big island for just one person also. Not that I know anything about islands.
So there was one last thing that I was thinking about after the episode, and I talked with Laura because, you know, wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing something, but it seemed like I didn't understand why Sir John didn't have like a quick little scene where prior to the fire, he was going in and taking all the paintings, because if there's like 12 very valuable paintings still in the studio and he was, you know, the one behind all of this, like, why didn't he go get them?
Or like you said, why did he set the fire in the first place?
Right. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that, Elizabeth? Because I was like,
The only thought that I would have had was something I think we had mentioned very briefly in the last segment, which was that they don't want to flood the market. So this guy is dead. Well, he's not even dead yet, is he? Yes, he is. Sorry. I'm getting my timeline messed up. So he's dead. Everything has gone up in value, but that's based on the amount of paintings that are like in circulation or that are like out in the art world. You think you'd dilute the market by putting more in there? I don't know. That would be my only thing. I guess it would kind of look suspicious for him if after the fire burned down, like, a painting showed up on the market and Miguel or Margot or somebody recognized it and said, oh, that was a painting that was in the studio. We thought it burned down. How did you get it? I don't want to give him that much credit, but that's literally the only thing I can think of besides the whole supply and demand thing. But
right.
Also, I have makes no sense. Idea. You have to kind of like suspend logic and like
sure.
normal in people reason, stuff yeah. for this. Yeah.
The last thing that I'll say is I thought the guy in the little butler's outfit was interesting because he only showed up when Diego had an arrow sticking out of his back, carrying him on like a piece of fence or something. And then for the fire, he's got the hose out.
Yeah, you've done first aid training. We were talking about that and about field medicine. Like, is that something you do? Like, put him on a flat piece of something to keep their body stable? Like, is that, Laura thinks that's just batshit, but I think there might be some like funny reason.
No, I mean, it is batshit. Anytime anyone is impaled on anything, and I've seen the craziest impalements a word?
Impalations.
I've seen, where once, like, for instance, someone that we had to remove from a metal fence that had like spikes on the top we had to cut the bars off and leave it in him. You cannot remove whatever items impaled because obviously that's just going to leave a big cavity to bleed out. And then when they, I loved how they put him like on his back, even though he'd been shot in the back. So they pulled the arrow, put him on his back and like, okay, all of these things in this scenario are dead wrong.
It's part of the reason why we love expert witnesses so much is because they confirm what we were secretly thinking. That something that doesn't like taste right or smell right. And in that situation, like, and they also, I wasn't even sure he was dead until they got to his room. So I'm like, what if you were still alive and you were like kind of flailing him around like that? Thank you so much for your expert testimony. But we have to ask you, as spouse of the pod and guest host, did you like this episode? You're familiar with our ashtray rating system, so.
Yes, I am. And I love that it's ashtray.
Do you have an ashtray rating for this episode?
I do. I do. You know, of all the ones that I've seen, this was probably, I'd say, a 6.5. Ashtrays.
Wow. You are
generous. I liked it because it had the international flair. Everyone, you know, had an accent and yeah, it was just, I thought it was an interesting group of people. And of course the fire. That was the attraction.
She could never remember Margot's name. She kept calling her
Wouldn't
Marta.
Wouldn't remember her name if I hadn't had to write it down 5 or 6 times.
What about Golden Grady? Do you have a Golden Grady?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure that I understand the concept of Golden Grady completely.
We'll give you a minute to think it over while we give our ratings, because I think that you were too kind and I would give it maybe 5 ashtrays.
Oh, wow. Again, very generous.
Oh no. Are you going to come out hating on this? Because
I was thinking 2 ashtrays.
Are you serious?
I did not like this episode. It was so boring. I could not watch more than 7 or 8 minutes at a time. It did not keep my attention.
It did really drag on. And I remember looking at it being like, is this like over yet? And I don't want that to be the thing. And then the plot was a little convoluted too, but wow, that's a...
And so they normally kill off the person in the first, you know, scene or two, but Diego survived for half of the episode. It was like right at the halfway mark before he died.
Already. Yeah. Yeah, because it's not a mystery if nobody's dead.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess.
So, okay, maybe I was just like in a bad mood the last couple of weeks. So I will throw in some cushion and I'll give it 3 ashtrays.
Okay. Well, that's very nice of you. It seems that Michelle is a much more generous person than you, but also I guess she hasn't had to watch 16 episodes to talk about.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe the 16th episode is wearing thin at this point. But no, I mean, you know, in comparison to the other ones, I'd say it wasn't that intriguing, but it was good, I thought.
The Golden Grady Award is our award that we give to the character that most exhibits the spirit of Grady Fletcher, right. Jessica's niece, kind of like the bumbling, failing up white guy with like, he means well, but he really doesn't know what he's doing and he's constantly in need of rescue. So just,
well,
it's more of a vibe than it is any particular set of characteristics.
I mean, so then... Under those circumstances, I would have to say Miguel. Mm. I mean, because he's clearly riding Papa's coattails, and some woman that they never showed was leading him around by the nose. I mean, she had complete control over him, but it was clear that he was just sort of not really contributing anything.
Yeah, he didn't really think his big escape plan through either. That's a Grady trait.
This inexplicable head wound. I don't understand. He was just trying to leave the island on a boat, and then now he's got a concussion and he's bleeding from the head.
Right.
I don't really understand that.
What was he addicted to?
They never said.
It's okay. Just drugs. You know, drugs are bad.
Okay. It was probably those marijuana pills.
Marijuana pills are pretty deadly. Not even once. The closest I could find to a Golden Grady was Willard when he like faked a heart attack to get off the island, because that is the kind of stupid shit that Grady would do if he were in trouble. Is just like potentially kill himself just to get away from the situation because he fucked it up so bad.
Right, right.
So that's my Golden Grady.
So I agree with your Golden Grady, but for different reasons. I too think it's Willard, but for leaving such damning evidence at the crime scene of his assassination attempt. He left two cigarette butts and a like half-used matchbook. I know there are a lot of smokers, like Elaine was a smoker, probably some people smoke when they drank or whatever, but that kind of narrowed the suspect pool down. And then it's
also
just
like brand of cigarettes and like that, yes, kind of thing.
And then the matchbook, like what if the matchbook came from like a gentleman's club in an area of London that he lives in?
Well, I just have to say that the thing that blew my mind was Jessica was so hell-bent that the killer was left-handed because they were a left-handed smoker. Until Margo, whatever her name is, gets choked by, you know, in the fire, and then suddenly, oh, it's a right-handed killer. Like, those are really strong bits of evidence, apparently.
Well, one yes. thing that I would like to see is I think what left-handed people are only like, what, 13% of the population or something? Some like really like pretty low number. But they seem to account for like 60% of the criminals on like any given murder show, right? Like it's always like, oh, the killer was left-handed
on a murder show.
Yeah, and I feel like this comes up. I think this came up on an episode of Matlock I was watching the other day because I'm into that. Oh, now. Like,
you've seen one episode of Matlock, okay, and now you want to start another first podcast about Matlock.
I got an invitation to start another podcast, so I don't really need you. So be nice to me. I'm just kidding. Well, I'm not kidding about the podcast part, but I don't want you to go anywhere. You're better at this than I am. But yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I do know that left-handed people are more likely to become president of the United States.
Oh, how do you figure that?
Because there's been more left-handed presidents than right-handed Ooh. Presidents.
Really? Like, oh. Yeah. That is an interesting piece of trivia that I had no idea about. And I like to collect this kind of weird shit.
I mean, I remember my teacher, my fifth grade teacher telling me that. So, you know, I could be wrong now or I could have misheard that. But I'm sticking with it.
Okay. I'm like, I just Googled it. I'm looking at it right now. And, you know, I know not my internet isn't working, so we're going to have to wait. apparently, the first left-handed president was James Garfield in 1881, but he only lasted 6 months because he went and got himself shot. So, oh, okay. Yeah, I know, right? Okay, so the one other thing that I think I wanted to mention was about Stefan's weird plan about hiding out on an island, and I don't know if we talked about that sufficiently. It's like
Bulgarian
if he's a scientist
immigrant.
And he's any good to the point where he would be an enemy of the state, I'm sure there would be other countries that would gladly let him defect to them, especially during the Cold War. And I feel like that was a cheap shot at Bulgaria and a lazy plot device. So for
right.
what it's worth. It's yeah. like, oh, look, a Bulgarian
Random,
scientist.
Completely.
Wow, surprise. Yeah. But, so, do you have, like, any more thoughts to share? Is there anything, like, nagging at you now that you've had this opportunity to commune with us?
I think that I've gotten
oh, yeah.
a lot
no,
of
yeah, no, you're welcome
system,
anytime.
And I appreciate the platform.
yeah, she... We were having a discussion about it today, and she was going on about the fire and why was the fire set, and I was trying to, you know, kind of play devil's advocate and maybe give her another side of the story, and she just kind of got frustrated and said, nope, these are my thoughts, and this is what I'm going to say.
Yeah, man, you got to defer to her. Michelle, you are the expert, or more of the expert than either of us.
Yeah,
I just know. not to set fires. Okay, let's see real quick what is in store for next time. Hold on. I just typed the wrong thing into Google and I was very surprised by what I found. Okay. So this one is called Tough Guys Don't Die.
Ooh.
While doing research for her next book, Jessica hires a private detective to investigate a 25-year-old unsolved murder case. When the detective is killed, his partner, Harry McGraw, steps in to take his place. With Jessica's help, he tries to figure out which of the three cases his colleague was working on could contain the motive for his death.
Yes.
Okay. I'm like really excited right now because I love Jerry Orbach forever. And I am so excited about this because he's one of my favorite recurring guest stars. And the character's fine, but I love Jerry Orbach.
Yes. Yeah. He's great.
So
I loved him the most as Baby's father in Dirty Dancing, I think.
Oh, that was pretty good. You know who's Lumiere in Beauty and the Beast?
Yes, you've told me that. I was very surprised.
Yeah, me too. He did a pretty good fake French accent, I thought. Yeah. So, okay. Well, thank you again, Michelle, for taking the time to waste on this podcast of ours. And please come back anytime you like, whether to drop more knowledge or just make Laura feel bad about being stingy with the ashtrays. And thanks again to Maddie and Jeremy for their creative input. And remember, until next time,
stay woke.